This is the September 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Oh, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. J.R. Edmondson, he's at Frontier Futures, located at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Thank you all for being with us today. Just a quick reminder that Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. WILLAG.ORG. J.R. Edmondson, this is the first time that you have joined our program, though you and I have met many times at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You're at Frontier Futures. Can you tell me a little bit about Frontier Futures and yourself, please?
Yeah, Todd, thanks for having me on. Frontier Futures, we're IB, the headquarters in Cedar Rapids, but we also have the branch office where I'm located out of in the Grain Exchange building in Minnesota. And I grew up on a farm in central Indiana and moved up north where the grouse and pheasant are aplenty.
I take it you like to hunt in that case. I'm wondering, when you saw the market this week, whether you were hunting for bigger highs than actually took place in the corn.
Well, I think today or this week is really kind of a blessing to have this rally happen this early into harvest. I think you see some farmers out there that are maybe not quite getting the yields that they were hoping for, or that they expected, and it's kind of really coming in all over the board. I've heard people, of course, along the Ohio River Valley in Indiana that are pretty thrilled with what they're getting, but you get up into South Dakota and those places, they're getting into the hardest hit drought areas that are harvesting first. And so I think, we saw some strength this week, but of course that 550 number that tends to be a magnet here the last few months, that's going to bring a lot of farmers selling. I think we kind of put the fear in the eyes of some people of, this is what, corn can go below $5 if it wants to again. So I think people would be pretty happy to see that 550 level again and make some sales, especially if they're seeing some average or above average production.
Mike Zuzalo, from your clientele across the nation, what are you hearing about early harvest?
Yeah, very similar to JR's commentary. Welcome aboard, JR. I think the overall mindset is indeed the ag side is performing very well, given some of the conditions in the outside markets, Todd, given the fact that we still have a lot of issues when it comes to the Gulf of Mexico and New Orleans and even Galveston and Houston because of Hurricane Charley and the power outages there. So the post-report environment, I think, really caught, again, because of JR's comment about the yields. I'm hearing the same thing. My clients in particular in east of the Mississippi River are really wondering whether they want to sell any more at this stage because of the fact that, and I'm partially responsible probably for them thinking this way. USDA has record yields in Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and those five contiguous states. And so if Illinois is not performing well in a couple weeks compared to what the farmer and the trade was thinking, I think that could spread into some of these other states because most of them had similar weather patterns. Maybe down by Route 50, that area of Illinois is going to find really good yields because they didn't have as much up and down. But in our part of the country, we're going to really start hitting it hard this weekend and early next week because of Mother Nature giving us a really open, dry window. Nebraska clients are already running. Irrigated fields in Nebraska on soybeans not performing so well, 60s at this point, upper 60s at this point, but it's early, early, early going. Corn yields, as you say, are really a little bit off, and as we talked about with Indiana and Ohio starting there, quite a bit better. So my mindset is really to work harder on rallies to make room for corn, sell the beans off the combine, make room for corn with the idea that we can always buy back on paper once we get over 50% sold in the 21 cash, which I'm already above that right now.
And Dave Chatterton, and what are you hearing from your clientele base?
Yeah, Todd and JR, welcome aboard and good to hear from you. So, Todd, I mean, I'm going to echo what these guys say. I think Illinois is the key here when we look forward. If you look at it, I'll back it off. Go back to last Friday in the USDA report, and they bumped their yields up, corn and soybeans to both. If we look at where we stand currently at a 176.3 national corn yield, you know, we're only 0.3 of a bushel behind that record that we had in 17-18. And beans were looking for the second highest, you know, yield ever at 50.6 nationally. If you look at, let's say, Illinois, I'll split it into thirds. Let's say southern Illinois is, as Mike indicated, south of 70. They got timely rains. They had good weather. We are seeing record yields and some happy farmers in that part of the world. When you get into the central part of the state, it starts to get a lot more variable and I'll say mixed to maybe a little bit disappointing, not in a historical context, but in a context of the USDA having, you know, Illinois at a record 214 yield for the state on corn. And, you know, that blows our previous record of 210 away pretty, you know, by a pretty good mark here. I think you get into northern Illinois, we don't know a lot about those results just yet. But when you see that, I think they've had enough disease pressure and enough problems that it's going to be tough to get that. If we can't get Illinois in line, and as Mike mentioned, these other states that we're looking for records from the USDA, I think there's some room for them to come down on their production numbers via the yield. And in doing so, you know, we can see these balance sheets tighten up. And so, you know, in our part of Illinois and central Indiana, you know, farmers are a little bit disappointed. We're seeing a lot of disease pressure, tar spot, stock quality issues, test weight complaints. And generally, we're seeing guys come up short 5 to 10% of expectations. Now, you have to put that in perspective, Todd, of, hey, I was expecting 250 and I got 225. 225 historically is still a pretty darn good number, but you know, I was expecting 240 and I got 220, et cetera. So we're readjusting ideas going forward as Mike kind of hit on and looking at, you know, hey, I thought I was 30% sold. I may be 40 or 45% sold and the brakes are getting tapped here just a little bit. So looking for a pretty quick rebound coming out of harvest from a basis and a spread perspective and think that there's still some end users here that aren't covered. You know, we need to get the Gulf back in order, but that will happen. It's just happening slower than the trade would prefer.
So across the board, everybody is telling me that their client base is saying, you know, it's not as good as I thought it was. I'm wondering how good they thought it was, because in August, they thought it was not really good. And that USDA report is mostly based on crop survey or surveys from farmers. USDA went into the field, which looked like it was much further along in September than many had expected it to be, and came up with a 176.3. I'm wondering whether, I'm trying to put the farmer's perspective in place here, and is it worse than a 172 in their opinion, do you think? And I guess, Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, Morgan County, a good example of, you know, Jacksonville area, where they're looking at APH right now, and they're pretty into it as far as, you know, getting into several fields at this stage. And they were looking for, you know, 10 to 15% above APH. So I did a study for clients last week about the topsoil and subsoil moisture levels compared to mid-September of the last 4 years. And it was really interesting with Illinois. We'll just stick with Illinois, but Indiana and Ohio are almost identical to this. Topsoil and subsoil right now, 33%. Back in 2019, they were 37 and 33%. It's absolutely amazing how close Illinois and Indiana and Ohio are, all on both types of soil moisture, almost identical or within 1 or 2 points of 2019. And so, yeah, to answer your question, it could be quite a bit lower than that, Todd. I think in 2 weeks we'll know a lot. And I'm telling clients right now, between what's going on in the Gulf and what we're talking about right now, that Decatur, Illinois corn bid and that Decatur, Illinois bean bid in terms of basis should be the best indicator to where we're really at, where we're really sitting for the state of Illinois. Because in the case of the Decatur corn, you know, we've gone from 85 over to 10 under. In the case of the soybeans, we've gone from 40 over, I think, to 10 under at this point since the before Hurricane Ida.
Well, if it's the indicator, then they're saying there's a good crop out there.
Well, what I'm saying is the problem with the logistics can be overridden if we don't have the crop, because you're not going to need as much commercial storage, and a lot more will go on farm and a lot less will go commercial, and the commercials will realize that and start bidding up, I think.
Yeah, and I think the farmers are also coming into this harvest with a lot less on-farm stocks than we've seen in a while. I mean, I know from what I've heard in Indiana and parts of Missouri, I mean, there's some processors that are showing a little bit of urgency, and it's pretty isolated areas, but there's some places out there where the farmers just don't have the old crop left at all.
Yeah, and Todd, I'll jump in there and tell you, I mean, even at 10 under, we're talking about, if we're going to stick with Decatur here, 10 under on corn, 10 under on beans, it's been a stiff fall from these old crop premiums and a tight old crop supply. But if you put that in historical context, I mean, average 5 or 10-year basis is more like 25 to 28 under on corn, closer to 30 under on soybeans at Decatur. And so historically, these are still some pretty attractive basis levels for fall delivery. I mean, it's not, you know, the ideal as far as where you want to deliver, but when you put that in a historical context, they are above average. When you look at, let's say, go out to January or December, 15 over for January on the corn and indicator, 15 over on beans as well. So there's a pretty decent amount of cash carry built into these markets. All of a sudden, you take a river market, they've got even more built in. So, you know, I think you want to look at it in those terms of indication of where we're going to go. And I think this basis could, like I said, have a pretty quick turnaround off the bottom or off these harvest lows, just because of what, you know, everybody has talked about to this point on the call.
So I'd like to know what each of you think producers should do with corn that they're going to put in storage that's not priced at this point. They could make a sale, of course, for January delivery, and that is likely to be above $5. JR, is this something that you thought about, and what should they do?
Yeah, I think that we really got to see this market probably kind of come up and butt against this 550 level until we get to the end of September stocks report. Then, you know, going from there, I think you probably want to take a look at, you know, how's your crop looking? If you're getting above APH yield and you're getting better than expected, I don't blame you letting off some more corn here above, you know, around 550. But from the standpoint of, you know, we're seeing spreads have really shown some strength here in the last week. And I would say, you know, you probably want to sell a little bit more off combine if you are able to find logistics too, which has been quite an issue.
You know, I'm really torn right now, Todd, because I feel like that the price potential, if the dollar would back off, could be pretty substantial, because the dollar backing off and our price at the Gulf being so cheap right now, we get up and running here in the next week or so, pretty much full tilt, that we could have quite a bit more upside potential. But I agree with JR and the idea that you scale up, sell. Again, I would reiterate the idea that I think the corn market, and this kind of goes back to Dave's point about the Decatur basis. If you take the crop below 15 billion bushels and back towards a 175 yield, and then you take another 4 million tons off Brazil's crop, you're talking about 400 million bushels of lost supply. And this year it's tight enough and wheat supplies are tight enough. I think that could really make a difference, given the right circumstances. So I could be really strong-willed about holding corn in my own bin, using puts at certain times, like resistance levels, like JR is talking about, and really working hard on the soybeans and not having to worry about the U.S.-China trade negotiations, U.S.-China relationship, currency markets in the Brazilian market, which Brazil's poultry livestock update recently really made a pretty big deal about their potential to keep competing with the United States because of the currency. So I guess I would be a hedger in beans a lot more aggressively, something that I've talked about for several years now, just because I feel like I have more control over the corn market.
Yeah, Todd, I think the key to, if you're going to put the stuff away at harvest, you know, and particularly on your own farm, is to have a plan and to be looking at where you're at. If you're talking about cash carry, that's a different situation. But board carry right now, you're in a 6 to 8 cent carry situation out to the first of the year, looking to March or Jan futures, and it's just not all that attractive to try and be, you know, playing that spread. So essentially, you're making a bet on flat price here, a bet on board price. I don't think that's a bad bet. I kind of agree with Mike. I see it in the way that, you know, we've lost 60 million metric tons of grain supply globally since March. You go back, you look what happened to the Brazilian corn crop, you look at the Canadian drought, you look at the Russian wheat situation, and, you know, everybody, the U.S. was supposed to be this bastion of supply and big crop and being able to solve the problems of the world. And all of a sudden now we might not be, you know, have quite as full of a supply as maybe some people were anticipating. I think that changes the dynamic, particularly on the sense of the sentiment of the end user going forward. So definitely viewing it with an optimistic tone. But having said that, you know, we've we've talked mostly about the fundamentals of the grain market, but we know that there are those black swan things that are out of our control. We just got a good lesson in that with what happened with Hurricane Ida and the Gulf situation. We're still coming off of that. But look at things like, you know, trade policy, at the equity markets, at interest rates, and the things that are happening with this new stimulus package. So there are a number of things that we can't manage, and I think you have to be aware of that. And so to the other gentleman's point here, you know, use some puts or think about how you're going to manage that risk on the downside, because it's even, you know, we can be as friendly as we want to these grain fundamentals, but we know that if these world equity markets or financial macro global markets turn lower, we're going to get caught up in that wash. So just have that in the back of your mind, but I think you want to be optimistic and you want to be aggressive here and hold your powder where you can.
And to add on to that real quick, you know, option volatility has really kind of fallen off, and you know, options aren't that expensive right now. So, you know, don't be afraid to use that tool.
Mike Zuzlow, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the demand side for corn and how the curve has shifted with the Chinese imports for this marketing year and what fears or good things you think will continue to happen with that marketplace.
Well, I think it's the lack of competition that if we can get through COVID and we can get back into a more inflationary environment, because we're not as worried about COVID and the resurrection of COVID during the flu season, I think that's where we are in kind of pole position when it comes to the corn. But I think, Todd, there's two things that to frame out what your question surrounds for me is there's two pieces of analysis that came out this week. Or last week, USDA came out with their ag trade forecast for 2022, and they said farm and food exports are going to be a new record of almost $178 billion, 4% over this year, which is supposed to be a record as well. You contrast that with a Bank of America survey who put out a survey, and they do this every month, or roughly every month, and it said 260 asset managers who sit on about $860 billion of assets managed. Only 13% of those, 258, said they expect global economic growth to accelerate as we go into 2022. Those two things just don't jive. And the majority of the reason why the Bank of America survey was what it was because of the Delta variant and how Asia reacted to the Delta variant and their zero tolerance policy towards COVID. So this is the issue that we could be coming out of, and it really brightens the upside potential for the demand side and for the world economy. But those emerging markets, as Dave said, they're really, really, really important right now. Fourth quarter may drive the first half of 2022 when it comes to the macro side.
JR, your take of the export market to China?
So just looking over today's export sales, and we need to average about 770,000 tons per week to hit our WASD marks. And I think this is something that's relatively achievable if we can get another round of Chinese buying come winter time. And I think the issues that the other folks have mentioned of, you know, Brazilian supply is being pretty tight is something that hasn't quite bit us yet, as they're just wrapping up harvest and they're still sitting on a decent amount of corn just from what's in their country. So I think that, you know, you get some of this ocean freight values to decline a little bit, and we could see some spikes in export buying from China and from other importers.
Speaking of ocean freight, I'm wondering, Dave Chatterton, whether the supply chain will allow the export market to move efficiently. And I know Ida created some problems in New Orleans. I suspect those will be hammered out sooner rather than later. But just being able to move crop around the planet seems like it's been okay. It's not been terribly impacted, mostly because it doesn't move most of it doesn't move in the small container ships. I'm wondering if you see an issue with freight, though.
Well, the dry bulk market has been pretty effective here, Todd. It's just been expensive. Rates are roughly, just in a, you know, in a blanket terminology, maybe 60% higher than they were this time a year ago. And I think that's affected the buying patterns of some of these imports, particularly in China's case, where it's been very slow on the uptake for U.S. soybeans here because their margins have been mostly negative. And the biggest part of that is their values are really not that different than last year landed. But when you look at when you add in the freight component, it takes them into a negative situation. We don't necessarily look for that freight market to start you know, dwindling anytime soon. I think it's still going to be a struggle, and that forces some of these end users into a little bit more hand-of-mouth type of a situation. I think we saw that this week with some cancellations of U.S. soybean cargoes and China buying, you know, beans out of Brazil at a roughly, you know, $3 premium over U.S. beans, $4.20 over futures. And so they're not doing that because it's economical. They're doing that because they have to. But sooner or later, these products have to move. They've got hogs to feed. They've got people to you know, food to produce and people to feed as well. And so it's a really interesting situation. I think freight continues to be expensive, as you know, just because of the labor components of it, because of the fuel components of it, and because of these COVID restrictions and some of the things that have happened. But that issue will slowly get better. But you know, going back to your demand component, I think we're in relatively good shape looking forward here. I think when you look at what's happened here around the world, one thing we haven't talked about, I mean, La Nina right now in South America is leaning dry, and you know, into the month or any month of September, and it looks very similar to what happened last year. Now, that didn't affect, it caused the beans to be planted late, but it didn't affect the yield on those. But what it did was have a big knock-on effect in the corn due to the corn pollinating in a much hotter and drier situation. So, you know, we've got a lot of things to look at here, but I think that demand picture, and we've been preaching this to our clientele here for a while, I think it looks very good, you know, post-harvest and into the first of the year.
Mike Suzalo, will farmers in South America be persuaded to plant more corn acres first crop?
Probably, but I can tell you that the contact I talk to every week down there, Todd, is really getting more nervous about the issue of the politics in Argentina and also the politics in Brazil, and that spilling over into agriculture relatively quickly. And it seems as though those issues are always present, but it seems like even for their standards, it's getting more heightened down there. One of the things that I think JR was talking about a minute ago about the corn supply down in Brazil is, you know, they're bringing in a lot of corn right now from Argentina, especially since the river situation got better. So, I mean, my mindset is, yes, they'll go after the most profitable thing. Argentina will probably go after the key will be more corn because of the way their climate is. Soybeans, though, in the southern part, as Dave was talking about, since that's such a large percentage of their overall crop, we might actually see a little bit less corn and maybe a little bit more soybeans in southern Brazil if this weather doesn't shake out better.
Well, let's do transition to soybeans. And as we do that, I want to talk about the Farm Doc Daily, the ag economist at the University of Illinois price outlook that happened on Thursday. And they have some interesting numbers, in particular for corn, for their supply and demand figures. They raised harvested acres in the United States by 500,000 to 85.6. They raised the yield to 177, mostly left everything else the same. That gave them a 1.563 carryout and a $5 cash price. USDA, of course, at 1.4 currently with a 545 cash price. On the soybean supply and demand table, there weren't really very many changes. They do have harvested acres the same as USDA in September at 86.4 and raised yield to 51 from 50.6. That just gave them a 217 million bushel carryout instead of a 185. And they left the season's average cash price there at $12.90. We've talked a little bit, each of you have, about marketing soybeans. Again, I'd like you to go over that with me. JR, I think I'll start with you. What should producers do?
Yeah, so I'm a little less friendly soybeans than I am corn right now. I think we've seen some issues with soybean oil stocks coming out of the NOPA report that we had on Wednesday. But right now I'm wanting farmers to be a little bit more aggressive on, you know, if you're doing, you know, HTAs or, you know, hedging, a little bit more aggressive on those soybean sales than I am on corn, just from the standpoint of, I think we get into this Brazilian planting season. And while there are problems, I do believe that you can buy some calls for those weather premiums to be built in South America. We're going to see a pretty big acreage down there, especially with some of these fertilizer spikes we've seen. I don't think farmers are wanting to be as aggressive on planting corn around the world. So I think, you know, want to be a little bit heavier handed on those soybean sales than you are on corn, and then make sure to buy them some of those cheap upside calls. There's plenty of opportunities out there for like March 10 cent calls that I wouldn't mind buying.
Dave Chatterton, your assessment?
Todd, I guess I'm going to see it just a little bit differently here. And I know that, you know, Mike, I think, is a little more, a little more friendly to corn. I actually like the bean bet a little bit better here. I think the situation with the balance sheet, we can tighten beans much quicker than we can corn. I mean, the USDA has us at a 185. We've got our carry out at about a 150. And, you know, no disrespect to Dr. Irwin. I usually lose any arguments I have with him, but you know, I just think we could come up a little bit short here. If the yield backs up just a little bit, I think demand is the sleeping giant here. China, when you look at their corn situation, they've been very slow on the corn, you know, import side here of late. And that's because they have a record book on of corn from the U.S. And it's about executing that corn. And for corn, it's almost about non-Chinese business. I think it's the exact opposite in beans, where the buyers in China are very underbought. So this week, again, a good example where they're canceling U.S. cargoes and having to fill in because of our situation in the Gulf. They're having to fill in with Brazilian cargoes and paying 420 over futures to do so. And, you know, that's an indicative of some desperation, I think, on their part. So they've been waiting for lower prices. This problem at the Gulf has caught them a little bit off guard. I think when we come out of that situation, they have a lot of they'll be aggressive bean buyers here through the end of harvest and the end of the year, simply because they don't have any coverage. They have nowhere else to go for soybeans. There's no other supplier in the world that they can go to. And, you know, we have a situation here where we have a window between now and the Brazilian harvest and, you know, let's say late Jan at the earliest, for probably more like mid-Feb in March. And that's, you know, irregardless of the fact that they're going to increase acreage in South America on soybeans, we have a whole other weather cycle to go through. If that crop, for whatever reason, gets in a little bit of trouble, you have a very powerful keg here that the fuse gets lit on that side of the fence. So I guess I'm seeing it a little bit differently, than maybe the other two panelists, but that's our viewpoint here.
Mike Susilo, you're up.
I think those are great points Dave makes. I think the one thing that I see is the supply side is the one that I think has the most upside potential for us at this point. And I think Dave was talking about that as well, that the loss of one bushel on beans is a lot more meaningful than one bushel on corn. Having said that, we also have a $13 November bean price again. And so my issue with soybeans is China. It has been for a couple of years now, and especially due to the African swine fever and due to their, I think, mismanagement, quite frankly, and their visible hand of central planning. I think they took pig prices down too much. They released too many reserves, and producers are suffering right now. And I don't think some of those producers are going to come back for a couple of years, because it's going to take that, you know, a couple of years just to make money back at this stage. So I'm skeptical from that standpoint. I'm also skeptical because of some of their economic data that they themselves put out, Todd. We're looking at their August industrial output was the weakest since July of 2020, and their retail sales just put out about a week ago, weakest since August of 2020. They've got issues there, and they've got financial issues too with this Evergrande. It's, you know, some people like Glenn Beck are saying it's as big as Lehman Brothers back here in the United States back during the 2008 financial crisis. I think China's got problems economically, and their demand is not as sturdy as it has been the last 3 years. So that's why I'm a seller and defender of soybeans. And I like being on the board more than I do the cash for the soybeans.
Before we get a final word from each of you, I want to take up one last topic. You all have mentioned it somewhere along the lines as it relates to corn. Availability of fertilizer and cost of fertilizer for both corn and soybeans going into next year. And I'm wondering if that has caused you to think about marketing any of the 22-23 crop. I believe, JR, I'll start with you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you brought this up, because, you know, sitting here looking at a 1262 Nov 22 corn soybean price, it's something that, of course, you'd love to see 13 sell there. But I mean, from everybody I've talked to, I think we're going to see pretty large soybean acreage around the U.S. Next marketing year. And I wouldn't be afraid of getting some of those sales on right now. You know, another big thing is we're probably going to see a decent amount of double crop wheat and then corn. We've seen some pretty rewarding SRW prices. And I know it won't be a huge player, but it's just something to keep your eye on. That there's going to be an increase of wheat acres too. So I would be on the lookout for, you know, get some of those 1260 beans sold, and then try to look for some call spread opportunities above that.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, you know, we certainly have been looking at it. I don't think it's a bad spot in any of these numbers. If you're above $5 in corn, if you're, you know, 1270 type of number in November 22 beans, to have 5 or 10% of your crop, you know, potentially priced at those levels, I don't want to get much more aggressive than that at this point. There's going to be a lot of discussion into and coming out of harvest about acreage mix in the U.S. next year because of these fertilizer prices and the increase. But I think when you back it off and you look at, you put yourself in the producer's shoes here, and when we talk to our clientele, they're flush with cash. You've had all these government programs, got some rather high commodity prices. Yields may not be quite as great as where they had anticipated, but it's still going to be a pretty good cash flow year on a per acre P&L basis. They've got expense issues where, you know, they can't buy much machinery just because it's not available, and spending money before the end of the year is almost going to become a little bit more of a sport for these guys to try and manage their tax liability, if you will. And so a lot of those inputs are going to get prepaid here between now and the end of the year. And so, you know, we're, I guess, aware of the potential for an increase in bean acres next year in production, but I think it's just too far out to be getting too aggressive on that. We don't know what we don't know about next spring and what prices will be and what things are. And, you know, all prices are going up here. I think we have a relatively optimistic view of the market going into next spring, and we could buy ourselves a little bit of time in that regard.
Yeah, my mindset, Todd's pretty simple. I think that 1285 cash price, if you wanted to start 20% sales of 22 beans, that'd be fine with me. I think if that's the lowest price, I'd be happy with that. The key with me on 22 is the issue of where the producer is going to work really hard on probably selling beans for profit, but whatever corn acres he plants, he's going to really want to make a lot more than he made this year because of his input costs. It's going to be a lot harder marketing next year for corn, I think.
And a final word from each of you. I'll start with you, Mike Zuzlow.
You know, we've covered a lot of ground. I think in the short term, I'm a hedger, and I want to be respectful of the upside potential. You know, if we get rallies, hedge, but do it conservatively so you have some potential to recover some of those prices, and I'm more friendly the corn here. But keep in mind, the longer this Gulf stays down, the longer USDA is going to have to walk back their demand numbers. And I think the trade's really counting on these demand numbers for 2022.
Your final word, Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, I'll echo just about what Mike said here. I think you want to look, you know, at the end of the day, this is about a per acre profit on a P&L basis, and it's about a risk-adjusted P&L, meaning, you know, not waiting till last minute to sell and cover all of your risk and maybe winning that game. And so you want to keep an eye on the future here. But I think for this fall, look at your profitability numbers and what that means to your farm. Have targets set for what you want to do going into, you know, or I should say coming out of harvest for after the first of the year and going forward. If you want to lock in some potential for next year, there are ways to do that. You can do that with the futures market we just talked about. Don't forget the MP or margin protection crop insurance. Those prices are $5.08 and $12.56 this year. It's a 95% product if you're looking for a way to get some reassurance against, you know, $5 plus and a $12.50 plus type of a market. Those are options that you have on the table going forward. But the main thing is to have a plan and to utilize the tools that are out here. As JR and Mike have both mentioned, option volatility is relatively affordable, if you want to put it in those terms right now. So whether you're buying pairs or selling and doing three ways, there's a number of different combinations that you can use to handle, to manage your risk and tools that you can use going forward here. So stay optimistic here, but don't lose sight of the profitability that are inside of some of these numbers that we have currently.
And J.R. Edmondson, it was so nice to have you join us today. Your final word for the day.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. And, you know, the one thing I keep looking forward to is this end of September stocks report. I think we might see a surprise there. And I know it was mentioned last week on your show, too. But I just know of a lot of places that were, you know, kind of skin in their teeth looking for corn there at the end of the season. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a pretty bullish surprise there, unless, of course, the market feels the same way I do and decides to price it in ahead of the report. And then, you know, on the soybean side, we've seen some, you know, crush margins have really fallen off, and they're still at a profitable level. And crushers should be producing just about as much meal and oil as they can right now, but sure wouldn't want to watch that drop, you know, 20 more cents than where we're at, or else we'll start to see some people tightening their belts in those plants. So I think for right now, you know, you just want to stay optimistic on corn, have your levels sold that you're comfortable with, maybe get a little bit more aggressive if we get up back to 550 again, but then look for some of those cheap options upside. Some marches would probably be a good slot to buy. And then, of course, keep an eye on Minneapolis wheat. We had a short crop, and it's could get exciting here in the next couple months.
New Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including J.R. Edmondson from Frontier Futures in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You can find him at ffutures.com. Mike Zulazulo joined us from globalcomresearch.com. Out of Atchison, Kansas, and Dave Chatterton was here from Strategic Farm Marketing. That's S Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.